Good morning, everyone, and welcome to a special edition of A Vision for You. Today is Sunday, April 28, 2024, and my name is Melanie C., a recovered compulsive overeater, and I live in Canby, Oregon. The share ID numbers for Friday, April 26, 2024, are the following. The 7 a.m. Eastern Time Big Book Study share ID number is 21350, 21350. And for the 10 a.m. Eastern Time Big Book Study share ID number is 21351, 21351. This morning, A Vision for You is excited to present the title, To Those Around Us. Today's presentation focuses on addressing the spouses and family members as a recovered compulsive overeater from all accounts. It's Chapter 8, To Wives. It acknowledges the immense challenges faced by spouses and family members in general in dealing with the consequences of their loved one's addiction. It aims to provide understanding and guidance for those who are living with or affected by someone struggling with addiction. The chapter discusses the challenges faced by wives of alcoholics, such as dealing with their loved ones, behaviors, emotional turmoils, and impact on the family in total. It emphasizes the importance of finding support, maintaining boundaries, and seeking help through other 12-step groups. All of this in that particular chapter. It's fascinating and stunning. Many of us are familiar with these kinds of families and live them daily ourselves, as we as addicts have recovered from the disease of compulsive overeater and been reconciled. Overall, the chapter seeks to offer hope and encouragement to those dealing with the effects of alcoholism, or in our case, compulsive overeating, in their relationships and in their families. The term alcoholic and alcoholism is the focus of this addiction that speaks in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, but please exchange the words compulsive overeater, undereater of addiction to mean something to you. The focus is on providing support and guidance to the spouses and the family members of individuals struggling with alcoholism, i.e. addiction, the disease of compulsive overeating. Consider reading it for yourself. The Sunday special edition also welcomes our guest speaker, a seasoned member of Overeaters Anonymous, recovered, to shed light on the insights offered in Chapter 8 from time-tested experience. The emphasis of her experience and understanding the struggles faced by both the family and their family members will shine through in the presentation of hers today. Then the glory of the miracle of bringing families back together will be ever more brilliant as she goes along. She will delve into the chapter, the highlights of the specific details, such as the emotional roller coaster experienced by spouses, the difficulties in maintaining boundaries, and the impact of addiction on these families' dynamics will be very telling, and you want to be able to see and hear just how these things can be recovered. Perhaps there will even be some sharing of personal anecdotes and insights gained from working with the family through the 12-step process. The Sunday special edition underscores the glory of being reunited and reconciled with those that are nearest to us and have suffered gravely. The promises of living a recovered life, seriously, responsibly, and accountable is what you'll see shine through. There is a great amount of empowerment conveyed in Chapter 8, encouraging our spouses and partners and significant others to prioritize their own self-care and set healthy boundaries and seek help without feeling guilty or ashamed about it. Overall, A Vision for You serves as a platform for sharing this good news that is outlined in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous and to explore the themes of Chapter 8 in depth, offering practical advice and emotional support to those navigating the challenges living with someone struggling with relationships because of this disease. It is our pleasure to introduce to you today one of our very own that has done that work and continues to grow in relationships and intimacy with her closest and dearest or furthest family members. Certainly enough to come to tell us step by step just how this has turned her life around. It is with great excitement that we introduce to you Becca R. today. We will see her work and her efforts on a daily Big Book study basis. We see her, I guess, what I want to say. What a joy to hear from her today. Please, please help me warmly welcome to the line this morning Becca R. from Kentucky. Good morning, Becca.
Good morning, Melanie. Can you hear me?
I can. Good morning. Good morning.
Okay, I accidentally pressed star 3. So,
oh, you did?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay.
will work
with
that.
Good morning. This is Becca R., recovered compulsive overeater, calling in from Kentucky, and it's so good to be here this morning. I'm out by this little creek area in my neighborhood, and I just feel the presence of God around me in nature, and so it's really good to be here. I want to start with a prayer that I wrote just a couple days ago. And it just says, God, help me set myself aside this morning. Help me to speak as a conduit to you and the miracle you've given me with my recovery. Thank you for the pockets of time to look closer at the people around me and how my disease has affected the relationships with them. Thank you for the open-mindedness, the honesty, and the willingness to be here today. Amen. Yeah, so just a little bit about me. I have been in OA about 7 years, and I was introduced to A Vision for You almost 6 years ago, and it's what I call my home group. I participate. Service. I donate to the Seventh Tradition, and I try to come and share as my life allows. And so it's really good to be huddled up next to my fellows here who have been trudging and walking this path shoulder to shoulder for the last almost 6 years. Yeah, so the desire to do this presentation today really came out of my uninterest in the Chapter 2 Lives, which often is a telltale sign for me that there's more to look at. And so just thinking about the three chapters, Two Wives, The Family After, and Two Employers, this takes up 50 pages of our first 164 pages. I mean, that's a big chunk. That's nearly a third of that part of our text, which we come to learn in recovery is kind of our blueprint, our text for how to work the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, Overeaters Anonymous in our case. And so the importance of giving us 50 pages of how we can, as recovering compulsive overeaters, reintegrate into the family, and to realize that it's not just about me. There's so many more people involved in this disease of addiction to food and compulsive overeating. The effects of eating on my family, you know, my husband, my mom, my sister, my brother, my dad, my family, my friends. And let me be the first to say, I come from no higher than now. I don't know if it was because of doing this work that I was so aware, but I've just had this great awareness of my own inadequacies in this area of working to those people around me. My disease is a family disease, and it's had effects on all the relationships around me. Obviously in my home with my husband and my three children, but also with my friends, my fellows, my neighbors, even acquaintances in my day-to-day life. But I do have this desire to grow closer and to look at this. And so that's what I wanted to do in this presentation today. If you're going to look in your big book, the chapter is Two Wives, and it's in my big book, it starts on 104, but it's chapter 8. And the first piece I wanted to look at is the second paragraph on chapter 104, and it talks about the wife who trembles in fear of the next debauch, the mother and father who see their son wasting away. And I just think about in the cusp of my disease, and it started in my teen years. So there was a family around me who watched me literally and figuratively waste away. the things I would do with food, the diets, the attempts at getting control of this thing. And then next I'd like to just share about my husband. My husband was, he stood on the battling grounds with this disease. He would come home from work and never know what to expect. If I was in the food, my behavior was completely unpredictable. If I was out of the food, sometimes I would be on this elated high of adrenaline from the restriction or the accomplishment. If I was in an active binge, I would often be high and elated. Let's go out for dinner. Let's eat. Let's have so-and-so over. Let's go for pizza. And then if I was restricting, I would be a slave to the scale, white knuckling, so to say, until I would again succumb to the cycle of eating once more. A couple paragraphs down, there's a line that says, "We have had long rendezvous with hurt, pride, frustration, self-pity, misunderstanding, and fear." And I have to look at this as, you know, this is to my spouse, to those around me. You know, they've longed for this relationship with me. They've longed for a closeness and an intimacy with me that just wasn't available because I was so involved in this disease. The only person or the only thing I was able to be vulnerable with was the food. And I would do it behind closed doors, but nobody was looking, and it was just me and my companion, the food. And then over on 105, some of us veered from extreme to extreme, ever hoping that one day our loved ones would be themselves once more. And how often it was such a roll of the dice for my family. Back to those, you know, three stages for me. If I was in an active binge, if I was restricting, or if I was, you know, playing part of that cycle. They never knew what they were going to get from me. I love the line, second full paragraph on 105, first line. It says, "Our homes have been battlegrounds many an evening." And I know for me, it was any 24 hours a day. It could be morning, it could be afternoon, it could be nap time, it could be brunch, it could be evening, it could be middle of the night. I was literally a loose cannon. Over on 107, there's a paragraph that I wanted to share, and it says, "Even if they did not love their families," and this is talking about me, "even if she did not love her family, how could she be so blind about herself? What had become of her judgment, her common sense, her willpower? Why could she not see that eating meant to ruin them? Why was it when these dangers were pointed out that she agreed, and then she got drunk again immediately?" And in my case, back to the diet, back to the restriction, back to the compulsive overeating, the binging, the purging, the overexercising. I had so many pieces of this disease. So one of the examples, and Melanie talked about some anecdotes of my own life, that I wanted to share is my husband's a huge football fan, and he doesn't have a lot of interests, but sports is one. And he, in our early marriage, this was probably 10 to 15 years ago, he bought his first season tickets to our team of choice. And he was elated with his buy-in to these tickets. He got access to being on the field before the first home football game. And I can remember at this particular time, I was in a restricting phase. I was bitter. I was angry. I did not want to go and socialize around people. I did not want to go and see all the tailgating food, all the alcohol, all the foods, the dips, the candies. I was just so mad. And it wasn't towards anyone. It was mostly mad at life. I was just, the big book talks about that restlessness, irritability. That was me. And we finished tailgating, and I'm sure I white knuckled it. I'm sure I was in a place of self-loathing, probably from whatever the scale told me that morning. And we go and we enter the field, and he is like a kid on Christmas morning. And I am just this bitter, I can remember having my arms crossed, would not smile, would not participate. I'm sure I rolled my eyes. And that's how I showed up for him. I was unrecovered. I was restless, irritable, and discontent. I was attempting the talk about the alcoholic who gets tight at the worst moments. That was me. On page 116, it talks about the paralyzing fear. And it talks about you may be afraid your husband, or in my case, your wife, will lose her position. You're thinking of the disgrace and hard times which will befall on you and the children. And I'm just going to stop there and share a bit about, I'm an extrovert and I love to be around people, but in the cusp of this disease, it was another roll of the dice. If my husband was going to have his social Becca who liked to interact with his friends, or this mean, grumpy, cranky, everything is wrong, everything is terrible, the glass is half empty. And again, he lived with that fear of not knowing what he was going to get from me. Over on page 117, it says, the faith and sincerity of both you and your husband, so in this case, my husband and myself, will be put to the test. These workouts will be regarded as part of our education, for thus we will be learning to live. We will make mistakes, but if we are in earnest, they will not drag us down. Instead, we will capitalize them. A better way of life will emerge when they are overcome. And I just think about, I was really sad, not sad, I was bitter when I came to program and I was doing all of this work on myself. And I felt like it wasn't fair. It wasn't fair that all of those around me weren't also having to put in the work. Why do I have to be the one to clean up my side of the street? Why do I have to be the one to make amends? Why me? And again, like you can hear it in my voice, it's that selfishness and self-centeredness. And I'll never forget my first OA sponsor impressed this idea upon me, and it's been true, that only one person in any relationship can experience recovery, and the relationship will change. And I quit waiting for those around me to pick up a book, to join a 12-step program, to have the spiritual experience that I had experienced through my recovery. And I started to just participate. And that's what's happened in my home, in my relationships with my family, my friends, my coworkers, my neighbors, my sponsees, my sponsor. I've been able to just show up as myself and with my program. And I think Bill W. talked about it in some of his talks on emotional sobriety, just really letting go of what the other person is or isn't doing. And it's been two steps forward, one step back. I think sometimes the awareness of my behaviors, it really reminds me of a head full of OA and a belly full of food. It's really hard to enjoy living like that, affecting others around us from a diseased part. It's no longer fun, just like the food quit being fun once I came into OA. The awareness, it wasn't comforting, and I would huff and I would puff and I would go to my room and I would think, gosh, I've got to go and make amends now because I'll eat if I don't. This buildup of human emotion will lead me back to the food. And I'm so grateful for the program, you know, because then I was able to use the tools, work the program. And it's just, I have the same experience that I've had when I would be newly recovered and, you know, there might have been a big situation, a party, an event, some kind of eating thing, and I would make it through it. And I would just be humbled and amazed at the power of God for getting me through that. And I was starting to have this experience in my relationships when everything in me said, "If you're going to say this, he's going to say that. This is how it's going to act and look like and play out. And you're not going to talk for a week." And I was having these same, like, God conscious moments when I would show up through practicing the program, doing the next right thing, you know, making an outreach call, getting recentered, looking at my side of the street, maybe working a 10th step on it. And these narratives that I had long written of he'll do this and you'll do that and this is how it's going to go would change. And I was just amazed at the power of God. Just the same amazement when I came into OA and finally put the food down, like amazed at the power of God that this could be so different. Okay. On 119, still, this is the first full paragraph. Still another difficulty is that you may become jealous. Okay, and this is again, my husband may become jealous of the attention I bestow on other people, especially compulsive overeaters. He has been starving for my companionship, yet I spend long hours helping other people and their families. He feels I should now be his. The fact is that I should work with other people to maintain my own sobriety. Sometimes I will be so interested that he becomes really neglectful, or that I become neglectful of him. And I'm going to just stop there. And I definitely have experience in this of, you know, being in the food for the duration of my marriage. There was always a lack of intimacy, a lack of connection, a lack of availability to my husband. I was so numb from the food, from the behaviors, from the compulsive space it took up in my head, that I wasn't able to be the wife that he deserved, to be the wife that I wanted to be. I wasn't able to do that. And so I come into recovery and I get this gift, this miracle. I'm finally free from the food, the addiction, the compulsive overeating, the compulsive exercise, the binging, the purging. When we say in here, we eat three meals a day and nothing in between, or three meals a day and live life in between. Like, I just couldn't believe the release of being able to have all this time that I wasn't spending in the food. And like any good addict, I went with what was feeling good. And it was program. Program felt good. I was going to a lot of meetings, was making a lot of outreach calls. I was getting up early. I was spending time. I was taking naps in the afternoon so that I could get up early for prayer and meditation the next day. But again, I. And it became that I had put all of my attention and energy that I had been spending on my addiction, I was now putting on my recovery. And I have to say, like, it worked until it didn't. And this exact thing happened to me. My husband came to me and said, "I see you giving so much of yourself to so many people while we're over here drowning. We need you. We want you. And I wish I could say, like, there's this beautiful, happy ending. But the truth is, we're still figuring it out. It's still hard. Some days I feel like I still don't give enough to the family. Some days I still feel like I don't give enough to the program. I've got 3 children. I'm in several 12-step programs. And my husband, and I come from a big extended family. We have a very big life of involvement with our families. And I've always wanted to know the recipe, just like in my addiction. I wanted to know what's going to make me skinny, but I'm able to still eat like a compulsive overeater. I want to find the equation. How much do I need to put into this marriage? How much do I need to put into this family? How much do I need to put into my program to get what I want? And the truth is for me is that it changes every day. And I'm never going to have the equation. There's one who has the equation, and that one is God. May I find him now. And each day is different. And some days I have a very regimented, this meeting, this many calls, this much prayer meditation, this much writing. And some days it looks different. But each day I wake up with the intent, as I connect with my higher power, to show me what working with others is going to look like today. And never says anywhere that it has to be with people in program who are on inner recovery 12-step program. Sometimes working with others is being available to my children. Very often, I would rather do program stuff than sit and play Barbies or Spider-Man or do a board game with young children. Like, this is the easier, softer way. But I also find in my prayer and meditation time when I ask God, what would you have me be? And he keeps pulling me into these ideals that I wrote out in step 6 and 7 of how I want to show up as a mom, of how I want to show up as a wife, of how I want to show up as a sponsor, a sponsee, a member of OA. And so I ask and just pray for God's grace to lead me there. I can't do this without God. It's too big of an ordeal to face. But what I do have is evidence of God doing for me what I cannot do for myself. I go back to step 3 and I remember that I've turned my will and my life over and I surrender it all. I surrender starting in my home with my family. I want to just go down to page 119, the last paragraph. It says, it is probably true that you and your husband, in my case, it would be my husband and myself, have been living too much alone. For eating many times isolates my husband of the compulsive overeater. It isolates us. Therefore, we probably need fresh interest and a great cause to live for as much as your husband, and in this case, me, the compulsive overeater. And then skip a line, and it says, both of you will awaken to a new sense of responsibility for others. And I want to share on this. I have often compartmentalized my life. And even with my recovery, it was something that I did privately. And I would, you know, see my husband off to work in the morning. I would do my program stuff. I would very often, I wouldn't talk to sponsees or outreach after hours because I was so rigid about being available to my husband and my family in the evenings. But what I was doing was control. What I was doing was, again, trying to fix, manage, and control everything. And what happened was the two parts of my life weren't crossing over very often. And it was a real struggle for me. And when my husband came to me at some point, he's come to me often, and asked about wanting to know, like asking about how things in program are going, asking about intimate with program, that I started to let him in. My husband doesn't have a 12-step experience. He's never been in a program, and it was really difficult to let him in. But just like the food took so much of that intimacy that I was willing to give and starved my husband from the intimacy, this became an avenue where I was able to be intimate and be vulnerable with my husband. 2 years ago, I went through the steps again with my sponsor, my current sponsor, and we worked hard. We did a lot of work, and it was a couple months before I made it to step 9. But I had a big trip planned. I was going to El Salvador for a wedding, and she and I both really wanted to get for me to complete the steps before this trip. And I didn't complete the steps, but I did make it to step 9 before this trip. And I had such an amazing experience with my husband. While we were away, it was just my husband and I. And I had made my list. I had my list. My sponsor had me write out some cards of, you know, when you make this phone call, here's the script I'm going to say. And many of my amends were on the phone. And so as a mom to 3 children, to have a few days in a hotel room, I mean, there was ample. And so I used this as an opportunity to invite my husband in. And I shared with him about the process of the steps, and I shared with him about where I was with the steps. And I shared with him about making amends. And it became something we did together. One day we were having coffee at a small cafe, and we had talked about this one instance of an airport shuttle service, and I left shuttle service with their booster seat. And so that was one of my amends. And so I was sharing that with him, and I made the call and left a message, and we're sitting in this cafe, and I get the call back, and I'm like, oh goodness, it's the airport from Florida, from the booster seat. And he's, you know, kind of just cheering me on, like, you can do this, make your amends, you can do this. And it was just this beautiful experience. I know that seems so small, but just the intimacy of being able to share that with him. And he didn't get it. Like, he didn't really understand the necessity of, like, you know, they probably had a million booster seats. You really think that the one you took home was that important? But if you're an addict like me, like, that's the stuff I have to clean up. And if there was a reason that God had me put it on my harms list, you know, so I made things right. And I was able to share that with my husband. And it began a closeness that we're still experiencing. This was a couple of years ago. And so it takes a lot of effort on my part to bring him in, to let him in. I always feel like I can get on the phone and talk to another recovering person. I mean, and I can just bear it all. I mean, figuratively, like, stand naked in front of you and just feel so comfortable with you. But sometimes I struggle to do that with the man I'm married to. And so it's an active seeking to grow along spiritual lines, like seeking to share this with my husband, seeking to further walk this path of recovery and not feel like it has to have this big fork in the road where he goes one way and I go the other, but rather to include him. And I have to let go of my ideas of what it's going to look like, because I'm a control freak. And if I paint the picture, I want it to be like this Thomas Kincaid of happily ever after. But what I found is that God's paintings, God's results are always so much better than mine. And so I trust, I surrender, I turn it over to God. I know I've spoke a lot about my husband, but just, I guess, going back to the roll of the dice of what people were going to get around me, my children, I would hold it together, but I would snap. And I still have that capability today. But the gift is I can go back and make things right. And that wasn't something that was ever demonstrated for me and my family. And my family, it has just generations of isms in it. And so I'm really grateful to have a program to go back and say, hey, I yelled at you, and that was wrong. And here's what I'm going to do in the future. And what can I do to make this right? It's just becoming right-sized every day. I'm never going to arrive. I'm never going to be perfect at it. But I think about the willingness and the desire to. And for me, I feel like that's what God wants. God wants me to grow along spiritual lines. And I think the very last paragraph on page 121 in Two Wives, it says, so to you out there who may soon be with us, we say good luck and God bless. And I guess just the takeaway from the chapter is the selfishness of this disease. And I can be selfish in the recovery portion too. And I think of things my fellows have said about love and tolerance is my code. Fairness and equality is no longer my code. And that I need to have the thicker skin. And to have an active participation in these relationships, it's been hard. I think a side effect of the compulsive overeating is having this wall built up of you can't see me. If you can't see me, you can't see how much I'm hurting. And even though I'm not living in that active disease, having the availability for vulnerability and my relationships has been a struggle. But you guys are teaching me. You guys are teaching me how to do that. When the God inside of you speaks to the God inside of me, it's an example and a demonstration of what I can do to those really close with me who I struggle with having the intimacy with. Yeah, so that's all I have. I'm going to pass with that. Thank you.
Melanie, press star one.
Hey, Melanie, are you there?
Melanie, press star one, please. Okay, we're having a little bit of technical difficulty here, and Melanie is going to call back. Becca, thank you for a magnificent talk. Really, really appreciate your speaking up today and walking through the chapter on wives. that we all sometimes like to skip over, but you just made it come alive for all of us. So really, thank you so much. As soon as Melanie gets back on the line, we are going to take a list of questions. This is a time really to ask for questions of Becca and ask
Hi, everyone.
Questions. There you
thank
go.
You
go
so
it.
Much. Thank you for coming in and having my back there. That's a lovely thing about family and friends, and it's wonderful that this particular presentation focused on just that and the intimacy that we have here and then how it broadens to repairing and reconnecting and reconciling our families. Becca, that was a beautiful, wonderful presentation, and we just love the smooth feel of your heart and your humility and your humbleness in this. It was just very, very moving. And you know what? Life is not without roller coasters of the ups and downs and the excitement that we have with even simply not being able to be heard on a line. So, Becca, your work has been extremely much more than that. Hey, are you ready maybe to take some questions about your journey through the Chapter 8 this morning?
Yes, I'd be happy to.
Fantastic. Thank you. So the lines are now open for questions for Becca on this beautiful recovery piece. If you have questions, please unmute your phone by pressing star 1 on your phone keypad. Offer your first name and the first letter of your last name and your state. And then immediately upon asking your question, would you go ahead and mute your line again so it's quiet for everyone else and that Becca will be able to answer your question. Who would like to ask a question? I'm ready with pen in hand. Star 1, please. I think you were very thorough this morning, Becca. It was so good. It was so good. You know, part of our bedevilments that we have difficulty with relationships and being able to grow through that and make progress is fantastic. If you have a question, let me see. Hang on just one second.
Nancy C. with a question.
Let me invite one more time. I did a little adjusting here this morning. Let me invite one more time and see if we can all unmute now. Your question, please, first name, initial, and
Rhonda
date.
G. Pamela E.
Pamela E.
Loretta. Cheryl S.
Loretta, what was that?
Judith S.
Hang on, let me get Loretta first. I got you, Pete, but I heard somebody before you. Let me get Loretta. Is that you?
Judith S. P.
And then somebody P. Who is this?
Judith S. P.
Okay, got you. Judith S. P. Then it'll be Pete B. Anybody after Pete?
Lee Cheryl S.
Cheryl S. That what you're hearing?
Thank you.
Okay.
Michelle
Lee
B.
Eight.
Michelle B. Where are you from, Michelle?
Rhode Island.
Rhode Island. Thanks. Appreciate that. Did we catch everyone?
Lee H.
Jackie A.
Lee
from Connecticut.
I got Lee H. Where are you from? And I got Kathy.
Tennessee.
From Connecticut. Okay, Tennessee. Okay, let's go with that lineup. We may just take us clear to the end. We'll see. If not, we'll open it up again, of course. The first couple up for questions this morning, Rhonda G., you're first, and then Pamela. Your question, please, Rhonda G. And what were you from?
I'm kind of new to the meeting, so I don't know if this question's allowed, but
we'll
how
you
do
know.
You manage, how do you manage preparing food when you're on one program and the family isn't? Do you prepare two meals or one meal?
That's a great question for an Overeaters Anonymous meeting. do a lot of food prep. And
Let's hang on just one second. Let's see if we can get some background noise. Just a little.
Somebody's scrambling eggs.
Yep, we did hear that too. So let me give just a moment, Becca, if you don't mind. I'll get some line cleared up here for you. Okay, you can jump right back in.
Yeah, so I do. We eat a la carte often. My husband and daughter, who my oldest is 13, and so her and my husband eat similar. And then I have two younger children who eat a lot of younger children food, and I eat just about the same stuff every day. And I would be happy to talk to you more about that. I do meal prep, and I always have things ready to just pull out and eat because it is a busy time feeding the family and feeding myself. And so I find one thing that I can do is try to have things ready and available for all of us. So I'll leave my number at the end and feel free to reach out. Welcome.
Thank you so much for your question this morning. Appreciate that. Next up is Pamela E. Your question today.
Hi. Thank you so much, Becca. Yes, Pamela E. from California. My question is, I was just touting the chapter to the wives and the family afterwards to people the other day, and only now was I hearing it in another way. That is for me to realize what's happening. How long did it take you to come to that place of surrender and being with the family and love and compassion? I know that's what this is all about, but how long the journey? I'm like doing this forever. Thank you.
Yes, that's a good question. And I would say it's still evolving, but here's the deal. I had to get out of the food. I had to get through the steps and recovered to even have the bandwidth to get into this emotional sobriety work that we're dealing with. I think about what Harlan says, recover, recover, recover. Because without my recovery, all bets are off. There's no intimacy. There's no continuing to seek for more, for a deeper connection with God and my fellows. So first and foremost, I had to just recover. And then in steps 10, 11, and 12, you know, I'm growing in the relationship I have with my Creator. I'm taking that time out. My sponsor likes to say, if it ever feels stagnant, then shake things up. That's my experience. It's a work in progress.
Thank you very much for your question, Pamela E. Loretta H., your question this morning, followed by Judith S.P.
Good morning, Melody, and good morning, Becca. Your journey has been God-filled. I just love it. This may not be, okay, so you said your family, and especially if you come from an alcoholic background or has a lot of isms, and this is more a family afterwards question, but being that you've talked about the family, my husband is sainted, but I have a sister and brother-in-law who have been in program over half a century. And they torture me, and I try to bring the ideal relationships into this situation, a weighed and measured, and I always come back out of the relationship very sad. And so I don't know. I know it's let go, let God, but how do I keep peace in my own heart with them always feeling like they have to threaten me with my program because they don't believe in it, and with that I pass. Thank you. It may be too much, and if you can't answer it, we'll talk separately.
Thanks for your question, Loretta. Wow. I just think I need to be surrounded by people who support my program, even if they don't understand it. Do they support and love me? There are plenty of people in my circle who do not understand it, but they support and love me. I don't really have a lot to comment. Sorry.
Thank you. Thank you for your question, Loretta. Next up, Judith S.P., followed by Pete B. Star One, Judith S.P.
Hi, this is Judith S.P. in Maryland, greatly recovered. Thank you, God. And thank you, Becca, so much, and Melanie, for your continuing insightful, loving support for our fellowship. Becca, as you were sharing, what I came to realize was one of the reasons that I've had hesitancy with the chapters after working with others is because it now really catapults me into others. And there's a resistance on my part about letting go of I, even though I so commit to we. And my question is, the deeper that you get into the work, alongside the deeper you get into intimacy with family, how do you, on a moment-to-moment basis, support your recovery by melding or sort of letting dissipate that artificial boundary between fellowship and family on a moment-to-moment basis in your day? Thank you for allowing me to ask the question.
That's a good question. I think it's just being connected, staying in the third step of turning my will and my life over each day. I don't know how this day is supposed to pan out. I can have plans. I can make plans, but I can't plan the outcome. And just learning to be flexible, and when something doesn't happen the way I want it to, I often find myself saying, okay, God, all right, I see you. What are we going to do now? And just feeling that connection. But in order for me to feel the connection, I have to be seeking the connection, which goes right back to that 11th step. You know, seeking each day, each 24 hours, connection with this higher power I've gotten to know so well. And just being open. It is different every single day. Every single day. And I am an addict through and through, with a very, like, I want A plus B equals C. Like, I want it to look the same every day, and that is not my reality. So I think just staying in that third and 11th step.
Thank you, Judith SP, for your question this morning. She's from Maryland. I neglected to mention the states if you want to be in contact with them. Next up with a question is Pete B. from Pennsylvania, followed by Cheryl S.
Thank you, Melanie, for your service. Thank you, Becca. Those were my eggs being scrambled. Just want to let everybody know. So in any case, thank you, Becca, for your presentation. I hope you go back and listen to it, because with the birds chirping in the background and your calm demeanor, it almost felt like a meditation. It was really, 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 really peaceful. But anyway, here's my question. On page 52, it talks about the bedevilments. I think you mentioned them a couple times. But it says that bedevilments are human problems, right? These are problems that aren't unique to. I mean, well, my question is: do you feel like the bedevilments, as listed on page 52, do you think that they're any different for compulsive overeaters than they are for any other human beings?
Absolutely. I mean, that's my opinion, but. Yeah, I feel like it's something part of this disease that I can't have. You know, I have trouble with personal relationships. I can't control my emotional nature. I'm a prey to misery and depression. I mean, I see so many people around me who just respond and act so different. And so I really do feel like the bedevilments are part of my disease, which can also be a good thing, because I have a solution. It's right here in this book, through the 12 steps. Thank you for the question.
Thank you very much for the question, Pete B. from Pennsylvania. Cheryl S., you're up now with your question, followed by Michelle B. from Rhode Island. Cheryl's from Nevada.
Thank you,
Nevada.
Melanie. Mm-hmm. Yes, this is Cheryl S. from Nevada, gratefully recovered. Thank you, Becca, for that beautiful, insightful talk. I too really struggle with balancing family and program, and also I really struggle with seeing my part. You know, what the havoc that I caused. I really appreciated your example of the football game with your husband when you were not in recovery and how you showed up for that football game. And I was wondering if you could share with us how you show up for the football games today.
I would be happy to. I am so, it is another gift of the program. It just amazes me when we go to a football game, and it's usually an all-day event, and we bring our children, and we fellowship, and we have a cooler usually full of booze and food, and I've got my weighed and measured meals right there alongside, and I'm able to see our old friends, these people we've been tailgating with for years now, and just be there. I'm happy to be there, and I'm there. Like, I'm not in the food. I'm not thinking about the next chicken wing or the next pretzel. I'm there, and I've so been able to experience the neutrality, which has opened up all this space for people, for relationships. We tailgate with some college friends, and typically that's the only time during the year we see them. But, you know, year after year, we keep coming back, and it's just really lovely, the years I've had in recovery, to participate in the football. And that was another one of the things, like, how am I going to stay abstinent at a football game? Like, who does that? How can I do that? And, you know, call me. It's possible. You can make it work. Thank you. That's a great question.
Us from Nevada for your question. Michelle B. from Rhode Island, followed by Lee H. from Tennessee. Your question. Just working on star one here. Just one moment, please. Well, in the interest of time, let's move forward to Lee H. and we'll circle back to Michelle B. Lee H. from Tennessee, you want to ask your question, please?
Well, thank you so much, Melanie, for your service. And Becca, it's so great to hear you on the line. I got in late and I kept thinking, now whose voice is this? And I realized that's my buddy Becca, my next door neighbor. I just love it when you give these talks. They're so realistic, and I guess what I'm coming off of a family wedding, a whole weekend of being with family, so it really is so applicable to me what you're talking about today. I just wonder, you said it's really important to stay connected with your fellowship. I wonder, is there a prayer you say in the morning to connect, and do you, how important is it for you to just make outreach calls when you're going through an intense, you know, activity with a lot of family? I hope that makes sense.
Hey, Lee, good to hear you. Good question. Again, I wish I could say it's this particular prayer or this particular equation, but the reality is it's different. Sometimes I'll go through situations and I'll make lots of outreach calls. Sometimes I make very few outreach calls, and that's okay too. So I think just taking my spiritual temperature and then, you know, asking God. And the beautiful thing about those outreach calls is the more I make, the more I receive. And so sometimes I'm going through an event and I might not pick that phone up one time, but my phone is ringing and it's you guys. And it's you guys. And I'm staying connected. And it's, you know, I just feel like it's such a God wink that I can receive outreach calls right at the instance I need them the most. I hope that helps.
Thank you, Lee H., for your question. Let's circle back around and see if Michelle B. from Rhode Island was able to dial back in. You want to press star one if you're here?
Good morning. Michelle B. from Rhode Island. Becca, thank you so much for your share. And Melanie, thank you for your service. Becca, it was wonderful to hear you. I've been in program for about 85 days, and I'm just starting the steps. And up to this point, it's been just about, you know, really doing some reflection and soul searching. And that when you said, when you spoke about your husband standing in the battleground of the food, my goodness, it just, that point dawned on me, like, you know, not just about what I'm going through, it's about everyone else that's gone through, has been on this journey with me, and the impact. So I'm really looking forward to actually listening to this share again. So again, thank you. So my question actually is, you started your share with a prayer that you had written, and I wondered if you wouldn't mind sharing it again. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah, I can share it again. It is, God, help me to set myself aside this morning. Help me to speak as a conduit to you and the miracle you've given me with recovery. Thanks for the pockets of time to look closer at the people around me and how my disease has affected my relationships with them. Thank you for the open-mindedness, honesty, and willingness to be here today. Amen.
Beautiful. Thank you so much. Mm-hmm. Next up, and looks like there's going to be plenty of time to open up the lines again, would be Jackie from Connecticut. Star one. Jackie from Connecticut. I just want to say this too, and just in case I'm a little bit off. Was there a Kathy from Connecticut? Neither one. Okay, so what I'm going to do is open up the lines for additional questions. There's plenty of time. If you have a question for Becca R., press star one on your phone keypad. Give me your name, first letter of your last name, and your state, please.
Nancy C.
Deb S.
Nancy C. Deb S. F or S, Deb?
F as in Frank.
Thank you. Got it.
Tony B.
Tony B.
Jeannie B.
Jeannie B.
Julie B.
Julie B. From? We'll get them when we come back
in,
if we can.
I'm back. Oh, sorry.
Oh, good. Let's go with you then. Jackie A. from Connecticut. Let's go with her. And then followed by Nancy C., if you don't mind, Nancy.
Thank you so much. And thank you to all the problem solving when it came to the technical difficulties. Calling out and calling back in works. Star one doesn't always work. My name is Jackie A. I'm from Connecticut. It's a pleasure. Thank you so much to our speaker today and all of our shares. My question has to do with more of the communication. You had mentioned that you're part of several 12-step programs. So I was wondering how well accepted was OA in comparison, and like how did you then pick out what was OA related in your work with your husband from the rest? Like I think of specifically when I was in a partnership before, that was when I was in the food before I came into program, I would either eat at the person, or if I was out somewhere, I would restrict because I'd be embarrassed about what they were eating or what I was eating. Or, you know, when it comes to I'm doing more than you are doing, or I have resentments about this and why aren't you picking up this? So I was wondering how you navigated what's OA related and how that was received.
Thank you for the question. There is a lot of overlapping. and I don't always know the answer of what's OA, what's the other programs, what, you know, is this like what it's all about. And to be honest, it doesn't really matter for me. I go back to those ideals that I've written out, how do I want to show up in my partnership with my husband? I think if you have more, I'm happy to share more after. That's all I'm going to say.
Thank you very much, Jackie. Okay, Nancy C., your question. All about death.
Hey, good morning, everyone. Nancy C., gratefully recovered this morning in Ann Arbor, Michigan. And Becca, thank you so much for such a great presentation. And my question to you is, you talked about being of service, and that service always wasn't in fellowship, but that it was being a wife, that it was being a mom, and that, you know, much easier sometimes to be in the fellowship than it is in life. And how do you balance, how is your prayer life with God on where you know where service should be on any given day, and how to split that out so that you are balanced in your recovery and in your relationships? And thanks again for your presentation today.
Thank you. And just, I guess, circling back to Cheryl S.'s question about the football games, I mean, that on those particular days, that is my service, because it's joy packing up my three kids and traveling 2 hours away for a whole day. But it brings such joy to my husband. It is such an act of service to my husband and to our family. My kids like it too. But yeah, I think about death to self. I want to do things that I want to do. I want the world to revolve around me. And so just being open, even when I was approached about giving this talk, like I didn't really want to do it. I knew it was going to take time and preparation, and just the finagling the children on a Sunday morning. You know, there was a lot of movement there, and so yeah. But I know that you know that's our 12th step, is to be of service and to be open to whether that's being a reader at my home group, this meeting, or to do a presentation when asked, or to go across the state for a football game that I'm uninterested in. I just have to have that willingness. And I think it talks about it in the big book so clearly, you know, that spirit of honesty, open-mindedness, and willingness. And just like I cannot want to go to a meeting and I leave the meeting thinking, I am so darn happy I went to that meeting. I've had the exact same experience with some of these football games. Like, I'll be so uninterested in doing it, and it seems like so much work. And then I come back and I'm like, what a great day. What a beautiful memory I'm going to have of this day. And so, yeah, just kind of setting aside everything that I think I know and how life should be going and being open to a new way. Thanks.
Thank you very much for your question, Nancy C. from Michigan. Deb F., your question is next, followed by Tony B. Good morning, Deb.
Yes, thank you, Melanie. And I really appreciated your talk today, Becca. And my question is, I noticed you were talking about, love and I think you said fairness, and I'm not sure if you said justice. And I just was wondering if you could speak a little bit more on that, because I think that's where I'm at with certain people in my life that don't even, they're still looking for justice out of me, and I don't know. It's just very uncomfortable. It seems when I go to make amends with them, it's, you know, it's extremely hard. So if you could speak on that, love and tolerance is our code versus fairness, and I don't know if I heard it right about the rest of that. Thank you.
Yes. So it's fairness and equality, and that is a core belief that I uncovered through this work. And I like to preface it with, I grew up in, there were four children, and everything was all about fairness. Like, if you get a fourth, then I get a fourth. If you get this much time with mom, I get this much time with mom. It was always a competition in fairness. And so I just preface that to say that's just one of those core beliefs I came to see about myself. And I have to let it go. I have to set that aside. The big book tells me my job is to be of maximum service to God and my fellows. And to do that, it's not when you're maximum service to me, I'll be maximum service to you. When you do this for me, I'll do this for you. But just, again, you know, completely removing myself and those old ideas. For me, I had to be clear, you know, not be clear, but have some kind of understanding what the old ones were so that I can be more aware of when they kind of come out. And those, for me, once I was able to see, like, fairness, it comes up so often in my marriage. Like, I want it to be fair. I want it even, Steven. I do this, you do that. I get this much time, you get that much time. And that is not written in my ideals as a wife. There is nowhere mentioning that I want to show up fair. There is a piece that mentions I want to be able to be what you can't. I want to be able to give 90% when you can only give 10. I want to lift you up when you are down. You know, there's nothing in there about fairness and equality. And so love and service is what I come back to. Is it driven by love and service? And I can use that as a guiding light to making decisions throughout my day that might stump me. What is the next right thing to do? And I can just ask myself, is it love and service? And again, just being really clear on what those old ones were, kind of in our step two when we come to believe in a power greater than ourselves. For me, I really needed to get down on pen and paper what my old beliefs were so that I could physically see, like, letting go of those. My sponsor had me rip a page of the old beliefs and just keep the side that had the new ideas about my higher power, my creator. I hope that helps. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Deb F., for your question this morning. Tony B., you're up with your question next, and then Jeannie B. will follow you. Hi, Tony.
Hi, Melanie. Thank you very much for holding the meeting today and all your service and managing so well when things don't go perfectly. And thank you so much, Becca, for a wonderful presentation. Really got me thinking, you know, that I'm still in my infancy here. And it's so good to know that there's this possibility for growth ahead of me. Thank you. I've got a question. You mentioned, you know, how we're isolators, and you also mentioned how, you know, our ideals as wives, daughters, and fellows. And I just wondered if you could talk a little bit about how you grew fellowship with others. And because I have this thing, I don't know, do I have to have a, I feel like maybe I need to have a 10th step, or I need to be receiving a 10th step, or is it for me, or is it for you? It is probably sounds like quite an infantile question. I think that's it really, because I'm struggling to grow. You know, apart from I have some sponsees and I have a sponsor that I speak to regularly, but I wonder if you could talk a bit to the sort of growing fellowship, how you did it. That's all I have. Thank you.
Yeah, I think of the line in our literature that says we create the fellowship we crave. And when I came into program 6 or 7 years ago, my middle son we had just adopted him and he was a baby. And so it was this oh my God, how am I going to stay abstinent with little kids? And someone reached out to me and invited me to become part of this WhatsApp group for OA moms in recovery. And through that, I really found the camaraderie and finding other moms with little children who are doing it, who are eating weight and measured, who are making time for prayer and meditation, who are devoting time to this work, because it's hard. It's a hard season. And that's just one, that's just my experience. You know, whether you're maybe taking care of elderly parents or you have disabled children or whatever, like, we are so vast. And to find people who can identify with us, I don't feel like there's anyone who doesn't have some kind of experience to share with someone else that really unifies us. And when I see others around me doing this deal, it encourages me, it lifts me, but I also find so much purpose in giving back in that area of being, you know, my youngest is 3 now, and my oldest is 13, so I'm kind of out of the infant stage. But to be able to cheer on those new moms in recovery who are like, oh my gosh, I've got no sleep. I've got an infant and a toddler. And to just, you know, shoulder to shoulder, you can do this. You are not alone. And yeah, I've got contacts in my phone. Lots of them are labeled through OA, but then I've got like OA moms. I've got even OA adoptive moms and spouses who work in this field. And I find I've created the fellowship I crave. And then it just grows about me. And I just love that we can pick up the phone, and sometimes it can be months, even years, and we can pick up the phone and connect, and it's just right where we left off. It's that God in you that's speaking to the God in me. Thanks.
Thank you, Tony B., for your question this morning. Jeannie B., your question is now. And then Julie will be probably our last one. Go ahead.
Sorry. Good morning, Melanie. Thank you so much, everyone who makes this meeting possible. So I am in my first relationship in recovery. It's kind of new, and talking about relationships, I feel nervous and scared, and he's in the beverage program for the last 20 years. So I want to have your advice on just basics to stick to. I know you've addressed this partly in terms of defining ideals, but just basic advice or grounding things you could give me, and also on not reading his inventory because he's not working the emotional sobriety piece. Even though he's 20 years in, I don't find that he's working his program the way that I'm working mine. Thank you so much.
Oh, that's a good question. And I have that experience of being in other 12-step programs, and OA was definitely where I've done the most work. The Big Book has never come alive to me like it has in my home group of A Vision for You. And so I just think about staying in my lane and just focusing on myself and my recovery. I do a lot of just shut up, Becca. You know, like, there are so many times that the voice and the negativity and the talk is still going on in my head, but I call it a success that it's not coming out of my mouth. I could probably work on my facial expressions, but that for me, it's just staying in my lane, staying in my hula hoop, focusing on my recovery. And often when I don't know what to do about someone else, I just think recover, recover, recover. Yeah. And there's also that other program for family members. Just throwing that out there. Thanks. Mm-hmm.
Thank you very much, Jeannie B. Julie B., your question this morning.
Hi, Julie B., South Dakota. Thank you, Becca. Believe it or not, mine was also to expand on love and tolerance versus fairness and equality. So you've addressed it beautifully, and I appreciate it. Thank you.
Oh, okay. That's it. Hey, you know what? Let's take one more. Is there, are there any other ones out there? We seem to have a few more minutes.
Margaret D. Georgia.
Margaret D. in Georgia. Did I hear
Mary
somebody
D.
else? Mary,
Mary
C. Let's see if we can get your... Okay, gotcha. Let's see if we can get yours in, Mary. Hang tight there, okay?
Okay.
See how the time goes. Okay. Margaret D., your question this morning.
Thanks, Melanie. Hey, good morning, everybody. Rebecca, that was excellent. I mean, I got a lot out of what you said, shared this morning. My question is, for all these difficulties, all these different issues, all the things that pop up regarding family, is it becoming more common place for you just to, instead of trying to dig in, get in there and dig it out and, you know, figure it out an answer, figure it out, just to say, okay, God, I don't know what to do. And then just turn it over to your higher power. Thanks.
Oh, that's a good question. Yeah. I mean, I wish my answer was that that's exactly what I do every time, but usually it has claw marks on it, and I'll wrestle with my will versus God's will. But I do think I'm growing less tolerant to sitting in that uncomfortable spot. And just, yeah, being open. Okay, God, what's going to happen now? What have you got working now? And again, the fellowship is, it's so good to be connected with you guys, because you guys are a great reminder for me of the powerful, miraculous higher power that we have. And I can get stagnant with my day in and day out here in my little bubble of Kentucky. But when I'm connecting with you guys and experiencing early recovery and long-term recovery and just experiencing life on life's terms, it just grows my faith. And my sponsee shared with me recently this saying of, I have to be around sick people to stay well. And I just think of, I have to be around new people to stay recovered. So I hope that helps. Thanks.
Yes, very good. Thank you so much for the question. Hey, Mary C., there's time for your question this morning from Ohio.
Hi, Mary C. from Ohio. Becca, my question is, actually, what a great talk today, because I am leaving in a couple days to spend 4 days with my family at a wedding out of town. And it's nothing but party after party after party since it's a destination wedding. And a lot of it will be out of my control with the food and my family. And it's my first time going away I'm not even 2 years into program. So if you can give me any help or any hints what I could do to be able to survive this next weekend, I'd appreciate it.
Oh, wow. I sure can. And someone needs to do a special edition on traveling in program. There's so many scary things about traveling for your first time, but also going to the movie theater for the first time in recovery can be overwhelming and daunting. But I'm excited for you. I'm excited. Like I use it as I use trips, especially for weddings and celebrations and commitments and whatnot. You know, oftentimes my husband and I will go together and the children won't come. And so it is an exciting time to just have a break and use it as a reprieve and to use it as self-care. You know, where I'm typically out of my norm, might be staying in a hotel room or staying with someone else, but just really like taking care of myself. And for me, it's doing a lot of program, which entails that I feel more connected and I'm able to give more of myself at these events. I'm able to be in that place of neutrality with food for the first thing, but also just to be in that mode of love and service. Like, what can I bring? How can I contribute? Who can I help? I have a friend who specifically likes to go into big social gatherings with like the motive of who can I help tonight? Who might be lonely? Who might need to have someone to talk to? Who's the stray one? And she uses that. So I think just changing the narrative in my head too, like, okay, God, you've brought me all the way up to this point to go to this event in this recovered state. What are we going to do? Like, be excited about it and change that narrative of fear and doubt and, excitement and wonder and curiosity and just being open to what's available. And for me, it's very much, it's very often God's plans are so vastly different from my very own. So thanks.
Thank you very much. Appreciate that. Mary C. from Ohio. We got a lot of questions answered this morning. Thank you, Becca. That will be the last question for you this morning. I wanted to make sure that folks had the share ID numbers for today so they can go back and listen again and certainly share this recording with other people. That share ID number for April 28, 2024 we had kind of a unique situation for this wonderful presentation. We're going to have two share ID numbers this morning, unless we change that to something else, and I'll keep you advised on that. 21353, 21,353. And then also you'll be able to dial back in to hear the remainder of the discussion at share ID number 21354, 21,354, 353 and 354. Quick and easy and breezy, just like that. So we are going to thank you again, Becca R., for your presentation with us this morning. It was just wonderful, and I was so grateful to spend this time with you, as we all were this morning. We're going to close, as we do in our usual fashion here at A Vision for You, by reading from page 164. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and we will surely meet, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.